third eye. Extra!
Sales red meat. That's what it is. Red meat that you can take out into the street 1 minute after you hear it and turn it into money.
In a New York minute?
No, actually, Jenny, in a Jersey minute. And today's Sell or Die Extra is brought to you by...
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? Let's welcome Fred Schillmoover.
5 years ago, I would tell people, look, if you can have a data-driven sales team, you can differentiate against your competition. But in the future, it'll just be table stakes. Well, that future is now. And a couple things have happened, I think, that have changed the industry. So one, there's a bunch of technology that didn't exist before. Whether it's, the ability to do sales calls, not in person, but over the phone through video. Mm-hmm. We have tools that are doing natural language processing that may find that, challenge in the value proposition that you have. Basically, a bunch of technology to create more efficiency in sales. And also what's happened is in the market that we're in, enterprise software, costs have come down. So what we're seeing is much more transactional type of a sales engagement, shorter sales cycles, lower prices. There is more data to analyze. And things are moving from the field to inside, where you can sort of observe and control the environment a lot more. So yeah, I think there's an overall change in the industry that's happening. There's just a lot more data that's being collected.
Is the change in the industry going from outside to inside?
I think that's for sure. I mean, that's quantitatively supported. There's something like a 10-to-1 ratio of inside sales jobs to field sales jobs. It's not to say the field sales jobs will go away, but you don't have to go and drive around your territory anymore, wasting half your time in the car when you can have half that time back to have more relationship building using technology.
Is it a Zoom meeting or a phone call?
I mean, for me, it's sort of the way that conversations work. It goes from from text to phone to video to in person as being the best path to sort of understand what people are saying. Like, it's very easy to misinterpret an email, or it's harder to be a jerk. It's easier to be a jerk or perceived to be a jerk for an email. It's much harder to do that when you're staring at someone in the face.
Rob Schell, spelled K-A-L-L, by the way, is a Swedish-American serial entrepreneur with 3 successful companies in 10 years. His latest startup, CN, is based in Miami, Florida, with a product development and operations center in Barcelona, Spain. CN is a new sales productivity app geared towards B2B sales teams that gives sales leaders an immediate edge by using the power of AI to increase the overall productivity of their team. Please help me welcome Rob.
We didn't start by just coding a bunch of stuff. I actually scaled several sales teams over the last 5-10 years. One, we scaled from 2 people to 100 people, for example, over a period of 2-3 years. And while we're obviously sold a lot more at the end of that scale process, the productivity per salesperson per hour, however you measure it, went down during that entire process. And I was wondering, why was that? And I knew the 2 salespeople that I had originally. I'd handpicked those 2 guys, right? And they were extremely knowledgeable about the industry and the product. And their work ethic were impeccable. And they had access to me and the rest of the product development team 24/7, so to speak. We were just a small team and we were super productive. The difference between that and when we had 100 people were obviously that was not replicable. And that made me start thinking that there are attributes that are inherent in all of this stuff that we're not measuring today. We're not measuring it in Salesforce. We're not really, it's all sitting in the sales leader's gut. And I think that with AI, you can start measuring that.
So what are some of those attributes?
Yeah. So we really look at it from 3 distinct angles. The first one is your lead and pipeline quality. So are you getting good leads or you're getting bad leads? We all know that leads are not creating equal, and there's a lot of details on that. I'll get into that in a second. Two, do you have good reps or you have bad reps? And again, there's a lot of attributes there that comes into play. And the third thing is the macro factors. What's your competitors doing? How's your seasonality patterns and so forth? And again, there are a lot of things there we can measure. So I can go into a little bit more detail on it if you're interested.
Of course we're interested.
Okay.
We're leaning forward. I'm almost touching the mic. I'm so interested.
Great. So let's talk about leads, right? A lot of times today, people just distribute leads on a round-robin basis or through territories and so forth, right? But what happens is that some of those leads have really good fit. Those are the things like, you know, industry that they are located in, geographic location, size of the business and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they really can't, like, for your product, there's a good fit and there's a bad fit, right? And there's really not much you can do about it. The other dimension is interest. A cold lead, by definition, has not expressed a lot of interest yet. And you, for your selling efforts, can probably bring it up a little bit if you have a good value proposition and so forth. Of course, a warm lead, an inbound lead that comes through a friend referral or through an inbound web form or something like that, has a much higher level of interest. And that affects the overall quality of the lead. So that's the lead aspect of it. But equally important is the people factors. And there we just talked about things like product knowledge. Of course, it's better when you're selling if you're knowledgeable about a product and industry. Of course, it's better if you have great work ethic and are doing a lot of things. And of course, it's better if you have great closing ability and be able to translate a great conversation into a closed deal. So, and we also measure even more intangible things like team mood, for example, where we are saying that the overall team mood in your organization will affect your role or outcome. And then the third thing, the macro factors, are things like seasonality and competition. And there, for example, I came here to Barcelona and I was running a division and we were doing great in May, June, July, and then August came and we basically sold zero that month. And there was a seasonality pattern that I had not expected because I came from the U.S. And
doesn't everyone take off in Europe in August?
Well, yeah,
they're like at the beach.
No, in Barcelona, they take off every day.
They're at the beach.
As a European, I should have been able to anticipate that. But in our business plan, we had not put that in. And that's the type of stuff that... So when you have all three of these things, you have the lead factors, you have the... people factors, and you have the macro factors. When you understand the true effect of all three of those, and they're not always the same for each company, so we are creating unique models for each company, then you can start understanding where your low-hanging fruit is, what you really need to address. Because in some companies, that may be on the people side. Some companies, it might be on the lead and the pipeline side.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Motivation Monday. Here's what's going on. Microsoft, a company which I am very familiar with in terms of training, they have gone on to adopt a process in sales remuneration that I believe could revolutionize the entire sales payout for salespeople.
Now, this is major. This is major.
Here's the deal. They go in and they sell their whatever. They sell their cloud services. And their cloud services sell for X, whatever the X is, and the salesperson is paid a little bit of money for making that sale. But that's 20% of what they're paid for.
What's the other 80?
The other 80% is paid for how the customer successfully uses the cloud.
So that changes the entire salesperson's sale from just go sell this thing to help them use
right.
this thing, help them be successful
right.
with this thing.
Now, I want you to think about that in two phases. Number one, hunting and farming is basically over.
Bye-bye.
You hunt, you sell, and you stay, and you build a relationship. One of value. That's number one. Number two, imagine how easy it would be to get 100 referrals from a company who has a salesperson that sells the job, integrates with the company as a true partner, as a true integrated partner, and helps the company become successful. Who's the CEO going to tell?
So I'm so glad you used that word partner, Jeffrey, because I've been hearing the word partner instead of salesperson for the last decade.
Yeah.
And it has meant nothing. For the most part, it's meant, I don't really want to be called just your salesperson.
I'd rather
be
called a partner.
I believe in my head. I'm helping you.
Right.
So I'm going to call myself a partner, even
though
the company doesn't call me that.
Even though I'm not going to do shit after I make the sale.
Right. I'm going to sell you this and then leave until it's time for your renewal. Or maybe just leave.
Right.
You know,
because
I have to go up to the next one.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. So now they're actually taking this concept of being your partner and saying, you can't just call yourself a partner. We're going to incentivize you on acting like your partner. That's major.
And paying you for it.
Right.
80% of your commission is going to be based on how the company's use and outcome of your service is based.
That's
that
right.
Means two things. Number one, Microsoft believes in their cloud service.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, they're challenging the salesperson to get out there and fully integrate, fully involve, and be paid on the outcome of what happens after the person makes the purchase. This is as revolutionary of a sales process as I've ever seen. I'm excited about it. I think it's an absolutely unbelievable way to fly.
So, Doug, you look like you want to chime in.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to add a few things to this conversation.
Please.
First of all, the reason we're talking about this right now is because it's working. Microsoft reported 93% revenue growth in their first quarter, and they are attributing it to some of these sales retraining, sales reorganizations that they are doing. And the second thing is that, you know, it takes a long time to move big ships. They don't turn on a dime. And Microsoft might be one of the biggest ships out there with Amazon and Apple and Facebook.
Hold on. That's ship with a P. But
ship.
Go ahead.
Ship.
Okay. Jerry, okay, we're talking about Microsoft.
Right. Not the big ship.
No, Jerry.
They are
asking.
A big ship and they are a big ship.
So they've been working on this particular reorganization of their commission structure for years.
Yeah.
And they've really taken it to the next level this year, and they've seen huge growth in their revenue because of it, because their salespeople are incentivized to help people use their product.
So think about this, diehards. I want you to, every one of you, sit down and make a note right now. How do you help your customer once that sale has been made? How do you provide after the sale value? Which has been one of my disruptors for a long time. After the sale value is the difference between reorder and rebidding.
And ask yourself how you're communicating this during the sale. Are you talking about how they're going to use it during the sale? Or are you talking about how they're going to benefit from their use of it during the sale? Because those two things are nuanced and definitely different. And if you're focused on their outcome, your pitch will be focused on it too.
Yeah. It's important for you to understand as a diehard that the customer is not buying a baseball glove. They're buying catching the ball during the game and either throwing the guy out or making certain that there's no errors made.
It would have been nice if you had a glove at the game the other night when you caught that ball.
That's true.
You caught it like backhand.
Barehanded,
like,
though.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
I was going to say, Microsoft is seeing where the revolution in technology is going, which is the cloud. But more than that, it's going towards these environments that people are buying into. Like if you have Amazon Prime, then you shop at Whole Foods, then you use Amazon Prime Video. If you're in the Apple environment, you use iTunes, you have the Apple Watch.
And I'm an Appler.
Yeah, you buy their products. So Microsoft said, in order to sell that environment, we must partner with companies and convince them that the one product that they're buying today is going to be the other four products that they're buying tomorrow.
And they're relying on their sales team to make that happen. They are seeing and they are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the do part of it involves the sales team in a way that they have never been involved before.
They're even creating partnerships with companies that they don't typically sell so that they can sell add-on products that will help the customer. And those, too, are incentivized pay based on consumption. So it's a pretty cool concept that they're doing.
I think it's amazing, and we're going to follow it closely. There'll be more Monday Motivation Monday updates on this. I think
we have some hellos from our listeners here.
Who the hell,
sure
who the hell
say,
is
hey,
hello-ing.
We have Ryan Burke from West Palm Beach. Did you know that Jeffrey was born there? Fun fact.
Hold on. St. Mary's Hospital, West Palm Beach. Not Palm Beach, West Palm Beach. I was born on the poor side of town.
Cameron C. Smith says, first time seeing video, I had no idea how good looking you guys are.
Oh.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, let me tuck my shirt in here.
Ryan Burke, they have one throat to choke. That's me, not customer service. That's right. As a salesperson, you do become in somewhat service.
But yeah, I don't.
About success, it's not just about sales anymore. It's about seeing that customer success.
This is another incredible fact that I'm going to state to every sales manager out there right now. So many companies make their salespeople sell and run. That's mm-hmm. the hunter-farmer mentality.
And the carnival model. Yeah. Sort of set up, and then when the gig's up,
you're out of town.
Yeah, exactly.
But here, this is what I've heard. We don't want our salespeople to, quote, waste their time servicing customers.
No.
Literally, I've heard it 1,000 times, waste their time servicing customers. When, in fact, that jackass company and that jackass sales manager has just cost the company referrals and reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And I'm calling you out right now. If you tell your sales guy to run, call me on the phone and tell me I'm full of shit.
We need to get Nikita down here. This is like a wrestling program.
Exactly. Yeah. 8 o'clock, at the, 8 o'clock at the Charlotte Arena. I'm going to put you out of sales.
So, like, if you're in the hunter-farmer mentality model, whatever, just think about it this way. When I was managing a team of salespeople, one of the things I did was I changed the process. I had them go with their account management service people every quarter, and they had never shown up before to these meetings to talk about how they were using the product and what they could be doing better and whatnot. And they got so much upsell from being in that conversation that they had never gotten before. It was an additional approximately 30 to 40% of sales. I mean, it was massive. So why are you not sticking around?
Exactamente. We've got the great Dave Ferguson sitting here.
Okay, so you're writing content every week. You have this book, Boss or Leader, and what you're saying is you can't be both.
Yeah, I don't think you can be both. I think you have to make a choice really early on in your career. Or quite frankly, on a daily basis,
am I
going to be a boss or am I going to be a leader? You know, we celebrate bosses. The world celebrates bosses.
I think there's like Bosses Day.
There's a National Bosses Day. It's interesting because it's part of the topic of my next book. But we celebrate bosses. We give coffee mugs that say the world's greatest boss. Jeffrey's probably got a bunch of them.
Yeah, I do.
T-shirts, yeah. National
Several
Bosses
thousand,
Day.
Actually.
Right?
I bought them for myself.
Hallmark makes a fortune on National Bosses Day. Mm-hmm. Yep. But there is no National Leaders Day, and it's kind of funny. So a lot of us grow up working for bosses,
mm-hmm.
and so we think that's the way we really should be leading people. And really, the premise of this book is 99% of the people, 99% of your employees are going to work for one reason. It's not you. It's a paycheck.
Undercover Boss is a thing.
Oh, I love
right?
that show.
I love
and
that show.
Cake Boss.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They don't call him Cake Leader.
Right.
Yeah. Well, give us your definition of each one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a boss manages people, oftentimes manipulating them to get to the result that that person wants.
To get to the result that the boss wants.
That the boss wants.
Okay.
Right. Where a leader, I think, comes alongside and guides people and works as their coach and their team leader so that they all get what they want, which is in essence should be the vision of the organization and the vision of what they're all working towards.
So if you're a boss and you want to become a leader, what do you need to do to start changing?
You need to hire me.
Oh, well, there's a self-aggrandizing.
I love that.
But suppose somebody's in Cleveland and they don't want to hire you. What do they do now?
I think self-awareness is an important piece. I think before you go out and even think about hiring a coach, I think you have to do some self-awareness, because if you get the right coach, if you're not awake, you're going to get woken up, mm-hmm. okay? And to some things you really may not like about yourself, and that is, how do you show up? If you're showing up, it's not how you perceive yourself showing up. It's how others perceive you. So you don't say you're a boss or a leader. You can say I'm a leader, but if everybody in your organization says you're a boss, guess what?
Yeah, you're a boss.
Right.
So do you have your clients do some sort of survey with their people?
How does that work? I do what they call 360 assessments. Mm-hmm. So in essence, you send them out to people mm-hmm. in your organization. And generally, I don't let them just pick all the people that love them. Mm-hmm. Right? We take a pretty broad group of people.
How many people actually take the 360 and say, wow, this is really right? Okay, I got that answer.
Yeah, you know, if one of the things I'm really good with people is going helping them go through that self-awareness piece at the beginning. And oftentimes people will be 3 or 4 months into it and they've worked with a coach before and they'll be 3 or 4 months into an engagement with me and they'll go like, when are we going to start coaching? And I go, oh, we have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't feel like it's goal-oriented yet.
Yeah.
Because they're not to the point where I can get them there, where we can really work on some really strong goals for them, because they're not self-aware enough to really lead their team to where they want to go.
Please help me welcome the great Matt Manero.
So you build this business, and then one day you decide you're going to torch it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That part.
We need to hear about this.
Come on.
Like, you build it, what, to $100 million and then decide, I don't like how this is going. I need to start from scratch.
Yeah, I did. I said, I'm not going to do it anymore. But it wasn't the business's fault. It was my fault. I had become a tyrant in a lot of ways. You know, I mean,
you seem like a teddy bear.
Well, maybe now. This was 2000, maybe now. But no, I had a lot of stuff to prove. You know, I had a lot of people to prove wrong. I had family that I had to prove wrong. My real dad left when I was 6 months old, and I never saw him or heard from him again. It was just me and my mom. And then she remarried, and my adopted dad, who is my dad today, and I love him, was a very difficult guy. Tough guy. Called me stupid, idiot, retard almost every day of my life. He was not a let me take you under my wing and show you the ropes kind of guy. Mm-hmm. He was a tough guy. And that stuff creates a lot of fuel and energy and heat.
He's and a tough guy in Connecticut. Keep in mind, you guys, diehards, he was a tough guy in Connecticut.
That makes him even tougher.
not like a Philly tough guy.
Hey, knock it off.
So tell us what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a straight up, I remember it. It was a very specific moment. And we'd reached the $100 million mark, which was always the goal for me. And I was a bad guy. I mean, I would call somebody in and fire them. And I would say, you know, you dumb shit. This is the best opportunity that somebody like you is ever going to get. You blew it. And then I'd throw a box at them and say, now go get your shit and get out of here. And I didn't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's because of where you were raised.
Well,
was that parental influence as well?
Yeah. It was a lot of things. It was actually, and I know this may not be believable, but there actually was care, because I believed that. I said, man, I gave you the shot that I create. I had to find this shot. I gave you the shot. I served up a lot of things and you blew it, man. You screwed it up. I just was impossible to communicate with and work with.
How did you realize that, though?
I started working with a coach, and he began to help me see some of this stuff. By the way, I'm a pretty introspective guy. I mean, I knew that things. You know, by the way, I had a radio show at the time, which Jeffrey, I don't know if you remember, but you were a guest on that show years ago. And I destroyed the studio live on the radio. I freaked out at my soundboard guy, and I literally smashed all the flat screens and the lights, and then I threw the mic at the guy. One of the mics, not this one, but one like this, I threw it at him right at his head, and I missed him, and I came out, and everybody was looking at me like, you know, this guy's a monster, and I was, and I just said, I'm going to change, man. I'm gonna fix it, and I'm gonna fix everything. I'm not just going to do a little bit. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to stop chewing and smoking cigars. I'm going to be better at home. I'm going to be a better father. I said to myself, I'm going to be a world-class leader. That's what I'm going to turn into. And we called it the Torch. And I said, I don't care if the company goes to zero. We're going to rebuild this company on mission statement and core values. And I'm going to be a freakazoid towards it. And nobody's going to hear me like that. No one's going to be disrespected anymore. I promise you guys, I'm not going to be that guy anymore. And I can only remember one time since then where I think I was, and it was nothing like it used to be. But that's the reality. Wow. And I had a bunch of guys leave. Seven guys left right away. We were down $30 million in about the first 2 weeks. They started competing
of course.
Companies.
Of course.
And started plucking off our, because they were like, Monero's a lunatic anyway. He's totally lost it now. Let's go start stealing customers. And tell you, man, I said, go. I'm not going to sue anybody. Go. To all of you, go if you want. And of course, that's not how it went. I have some amazing people here who stayed. And we fixed the place. And today, by the way, we did 113 million that year. And I bet this year, maybe a little bit too early to predict, but I think we'll do about 180 million. And so the torch worked.
Yeah.
The torch worked.
Go.
Well, actually, though, you are the torch. And what you did is just turned yourself off and put different fuel in it to be able to make it happen.
Yeah, I did. That fuel burned out. I was done with that fuel. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything left. And that's what started making me crazy was I didn't have anything to burn. I was done with it. I hit the 100 million. I was purged with my old man. I was good with him. I didn't have the pain really fighting me every day. I was like, where's the new pain? Where's the new fuel? Mm-hmm. And it made me a little crazy. But the new fuel now is being relentless to the company culture. It's building a world-class company. It's giving people this opportunity that is deserved of people who are willing to work hard and for me to reach my potential as a world-class leader. That's it.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to gittimerlearningacademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone, or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone, or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.